the Little Ranch House studio on Southwest 5 in Lufkin, Texas. It's Flying Handyman Show.
Well, it is, as a matter of fact.
I'm hearing something in my speakers I didn't want to hear, so I'll turn that down.
Yeah, you're jumping around a little bit for some reason. What the deal is. Anyway, how are you?
Hang on just a second.
Okay.
These technical difficulties.
Nothing like being prepared, is there? And this is nothing like being prepared.
I thought y'all were doing Skype.
That's what we get for doing Skype. Hi, Dale.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Not much. How are you?
Man, I keep expecting y'all to be down here knocking on my door with hammers and saws in tow.
Ready to help you with that deck?
Yeah, I got the brisket and the beer ready.
All right.
I don't think we're really allowed to talk until Houston introduces us. Let's give you a chance.
This, by the way, is show number 198, ladies and gentlemen, and it's May 17th, 2007. Mm-hmm. We've got an hour that we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining. All, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Our host for the show, the one and only Tom Shaw.
Hey, Tom Houston, what's going on today, man?
I felt better, I'll tell you. Anyway, we're going to make it, I think. Is Don Patterson there?
Yeah, I'm really tired, too. I hiked all the way over here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know Dale Campbell's there. Hi, Dale.
Hey, what's going on? I didn't hike because, hell, it's uphill both ways.
My name, by the way, is Tom Houston, but here he is, folks. Here's the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show. Here's Phil Parr.
Thank you so much. So good to be with us. Houston is on Skype. Dale is on the telephone. And Don and I are here in the studio.
Yeah. I thought Skype worked flawlessly.
It does most of the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time it works flawlessly. It's better than the alternative.
We're picking up some flaws here today.
We get those things happen. We don't worry about that.
If there's a flaw, I can find it. Trust me.
We don't much worry about that. Tom sounds a whole lot better than he does on the phone, I'll tell you that.
Yes.
Yes, that phone's pretty rough.
And Mr. Campbell, how is it? What's going on?
Oh, man, we're just getting all those essays in for all those kids. They've been keeping me busy this year.
Scholarship, too.
We had, 15 applicants this year.
Is that right?
Whoa.
Yeah, we finally got the prize level up to where people want it.
Where people are interested in your little scholarship, huh?
Yeah, $750. Everybody's after it. So
that wouldn't be bad, would it?
That's what we can do next blind weekend. Take $5 and throw it out there in the floor and see who jumps after it.
There you go.
But here's the thing. And so are you enjoying having this little cool weather like we are?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, it was 57.
This is a wonderful break.
It was 55 degrees this morning. I got up at 5:30.
Wow.
Good deck-building weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We took the dogs out for an early walk, and I've been pretty much just playing hooky, sitting out on the back porch all day. And, man, days like this you've got to enjoy, especially down here in our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
How do you take those blind mice smart calls out on the porch? You have a way of doing
that? Yeah, through the old cordless.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that, and then, we've got the laptop, so we're on wireless down here now.
Yeah, got that going.
We moved the office outside poolside today.
Why not?
All right.
No reason not to.
And taking the dogs for a walk, what do you kind of do, like a dog sled team or something?
Just harness them up, I tell you.
Let them roll.
I tell you, after having Kelsey for 13 years and me and him getting used to that old man pace, now with Dean... Dean wants to run, like, the sprint races and stuff.
He's ready to rock and roll,
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. We go anywhere, like the mall or something with a slick floor, he's running in place.
So has Kelsey pretty well gotten used to Dean yet or not?
I think he's gotten used to him, but he hasn't gotten used to not getting to go.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I mean, the other day, in fact, I was harnessing Dean up, and I accidentally Kelsey nosed in there, and I put it on Kelsey. And as soon as that harness went on his head, boy, his whole butt started wagging. He was so excited.
So you accidentally put it on Kelsey instead of Dean.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And it broke my heart, I'm sure his, too, when I had to take it off and put it on Dean.
You better get an ear tag or something.
Usually I can tell them apart, but Kelsey's got a way of just, Kelsey knows the old man's blind. I think Dean's still learning that.
Well, listen, we're going to do some list mail. You want to hang around the whole show?
Yeah, and, I'll be around.
When we through, we'll do the guest, and we'll give you about 15 minutes to tell us about your composite deck stuff. What else do you have to do? Nothing, right?
Nothing.
Well, Houston?
Okay, here's a lady. She says, hi. I'm a not-so-handy house owner, and I've been an occasional member of this list for quite some time.
Tom Houston. Hey.
A neighbor was just telling us.
Tom.
There's out of hope. Apparently a recent...
I can't seem to be having a
slight problem. Technical difficulty
Tom.
Here.
What's causing that, I wonder?
You're too close. You're hitting the mic too hard.
Oh, is that it?
You're hitting the mic too hard. Now it's not doing it now.
Oh, okay. So back off of it?
Back off a little bit, and let's give you another try with this, all right?
Okay. Apparently, a recent federal housing code standard passed, and now Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac want to approve loans for buyers to purchase their home. And since our homes are both A-frames, bought in as a trailer and put up on blocks, I fear that...
too far out in the country, boy.
This Skype,
about being in the stick.
This Skype stuff, this isn't going to work. There's something wrong somewhere. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. So why don't you call me back on Skype and let's see if we get a better connection. I'm going to hang up. Call me back, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Escape. Skype trademark. Filth. Escape.
That's what it sounds like when you hang up. And what the deal was with him?
Contact list view Thomas H. Vick.
Well, I don't know.
That's Thomas H. Vick. Let's see. When he calls back, there was something.
Tab. Alt page up.
There you go.
How about that?
Okay. What do you think?
I think that may work better.
Oh,
it's crazy. As soon as you start reading, it starts getting all funky.
All right, start over. It just sort of goes out when you start reading. Wonder why.
Okay, I don't know. It says, I'm a not-so-handy house owner and have been an occasional member of this list for quite some time. I think it's so cool.
Hiding your inactive notification icons. .. To see the hidden icons, click this button.
That's Jaws talking to us. I've been on the list occasionally, and now I want to know something. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right.
A neighbor was just... you want me to continue?
Yes. Yes, you may.
Okay.
You may not. Now Tom will continue.
Okay. A neighbor was just telling us that she's trying to sell her home and discovered that it's out of code. Now, apparently a recent federal housing code standard was passed, and now Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac won't approve loans for buyers to purchase their home. Now, since our homes are both A-frames, brought in as a trailer and put up on blocks, I feel that my home is in the same jeopardy. Where do I have to go to learn about housing codes and whether a house passes or fails? I suppose I could hire an inspector, but we just want to be informed. We aren't looking to sell right now, so we'd like to save money. Thanks for any and all suggestions. This comes from Eileen.
Well, the city you live in can tell you what the housing codes are. I have no idea what Fannie Mae code is, but I'll bet you could go online and find out.
I was going to say, she just named the two places to go, FHA and whatever the other one is. I mean, that they would have a code, but then to go in your county, I mean, city inspector's office, you know, whoever takes care of issuing permits for building can tell you
exactly... what the codes are in your house and what your, you know, basically they're going to want the normal things. They're going to want to make sure that your roof is all right and that your plumbing is up to standard and that your, I don't know, they have silly little things that take.
And it's a wonder that some of that's not grandfathered out depending on the age of the house.
Well, it may be, you know, but now I know that in the city of Lufkin they won't let you build a shower that the temperature of water goes over 130 degrees. They make you put a faucet in that cuts the hot water off if it gets over 130 degrees.
Really?
Yeah. Now, Pat, you didn't run into that in Hudson because they don't do that out there.
No, sir. I pulled no permits.
You just got no permits.
That's right.
Yeah, you can go to the city and figure out what you know what the code should be for your area, don't you think?
Yeah, because when we bought this house, there were some things that weren't up to code, up to current code. And then it was kind of up to us as the buyer to decide, but they weren't items that were going to interfere with the loan process either.
Right.
Yeah, or actually there would be a good place to start. I mean, too, is you might want to check with your banker and say what do I have to do to get you to loan me money on this house?
Yeah, whoever approves your loan will be a good indication of.
Yeah, and if you're going to sell it, you have to have it. Of course, they said they weren't ready to sell, right?
Yeah.
But if you're going to sell it, you have to have it inspected anyway. They won't.
Yep.
You won't get any money. All right, Houston.
Okay. Well, that's what Dale Levins threw in here. He said, hello, Eileen, your local municipal or county authority. We have a building inspector or inspector's office. They inspect and enforce building codes in your area. will have the information you need or be able to direct you to sources for it.
Yeah.
Be warned, much of this will be very dry and dull reading, and some will be difficult to understand. There will be residential, business, commercial, and other categories. That from Dale Evans up in
Cochrane, Ontario, Canada.
Yes, sir.
Our board
and then there's a guy that's got a question about lawnmowers. He said, hi, does anyone here ever seen or used a Newton battery electric lawnmower?
No.
Just never wondering have. How they work. I've been working on my lawnmower and getting a little sick of the thing and thinking that this electric lawnmower might be the way to go.
No.
The never only thing is I have a big yard. And it's fairly rough. It's about a half acre that I... it's from a guy up in Minnesota.
Wow.
Well, he doesn't cut it much of the year if he lives in Minnesota, does he?
Yeah, I don't worry about it too often.
Now, we used to have a long time ago an old Montgomery Ward rechargeable battery-operated lawnmower. And it had lasted. It had run 8-10 hours on a charge.
Really?
It was a heavy son of a gun.
Really?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And it was quiet. I mean, you could hear the blades.
Oh, they're
the grass
quiet?
Almost.
Oh, sure. You can.
Boy,
yeah.
For a blind guy, that'd be the thing to have, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Now, this one, basically, it had like a big marine, 12-volt battery in it.
Yeah.
And that's all you charged up. You plugged in, like a little cigarette lighter, you plugged it in, and it charged itself up, and away you went.
Yeah.
Does it kind of sound like an electric weed eater or something to that
yeah,
effect?
Yeah, similar. I mean, with this, you didn't have that crazy cord.
Yeah.
To worry about getting falling around or running over and all that.
You wouldn't want one with a cord.
I'm not familiar necessarily with that particular brand of mower. I know that they have come down in price where I'm not sure that I would be afraid to try one out. There was a time when the cost to me was prohibitive. I mean, I thought they were too much.
Yeah.
The thing is if you have that, if that is a brand, Newton, go online and look up their specifications and then call a local dealer. In your area, see what you think. I think you can buy battery powered mowers now for less than $400. In the threes,
yeah,
I think.
And if you have enough dealers in your area, you might be able to call up each one each week and just have them come out and demonstrate it.
Yeah.
And get them to mow your yard while you sit there with some IT and watch.
And you could do it three times this summer, that'd about carry you through.
Well, in Minnesota, it really would.
It probably would.
I mean, how long does this summer last? About 2 weeks? there ain't much summer in Minnesota, guys. But for a blind guy, if you were going to mow the lawn, that would be the thing to have.
Absolutely.
Seems like
thing
it.
To have.
Yeah.
It would be quiet, and you could actually guide yourself by the house, by listening to the echo from the house, and you could mow your lawn very nicely. I wish they wouldn't do that. Maybe mowing my lawn someday.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway.
Keep doing these advances.
That's right. What else you got, Thomas Houston?
Okay, here's a guy, and I found this very interesting because I had not read anything on it. It says there are new washers now that take very little water. Washers that run in a range of $500 or less can use as much as 50 gallons of water per load cycle with the large models. If you get into the price range over $1,000, that's cut back 80% or more, give or take. My old washer used like 40 gallons on a normal load. A new one uses less than 4 gallons. Also, they're switching to the digital DC motors and use less than a tenth of the electricity. Now, the spins are ultra fast and really wring the water out, so they need much less drying time also. They self-balance themselves and do everything better, but you still have to start them and put clothes in them.
Yeah,
and put detergent in them.
That's right.
Yeah, I have to put some kind of detergent in there.
Well, was this guy talking about buying one or what? What was the deal?
Yeah, and then we had a little input from Boob, who has one.
All right.
And she called it a front load washer.
Yeah.
And
now
anyway,
this
has to say about it.
This is from Boop.
This is from Boop.
Yeah.
Said, we just got one a few weeks ago. The water is pulled through the clothes, which is how it works with less water. The cycle times are usually a little longer, though. There's also special detergent for these kinds of washers. You need to be careful that the clothes are totally in the washer and beyond the gasket in the door, as the gasket is expensive to replace.
Yeah.
Another thing you might have to consider is the size of the washer, since they tend to be a little bigger. are a little larger than normal top loaders. I think mine's a 3.1 capacity washer. And as a Whirlpool, Bosch makes some nice chains. They're mostly much larger. Mine holds a little more than my old top loader.
What is happening there?
I have no idea.
It's making a lot of noise. Listen. It really is. Wonder if that's my... Surely that's not... It wouldn't be my computer, would it?
I don't know.
So Boop has one.
Yeah, she's written in and said that she... I think they had just recently bought one, in fact. Said she really liked it.
Really? I've never seen one, and we just replaced our washer about 2 years ago. You might know.
One either, but it sounds like a great...
You might know as soon as we replaced ours, they'd come up with a new
bottle. Yeah, something
bottle,
bigger and better.
Bigger
yeah.
and a hell of a lot better.
Some friends of Candace's have one, and they're really cool because being front loaders, they sit up, and you can actually put... They have cabinets that you can buy to set them on top of.
That's right.
Now, these are the kitchen ones. And because they're front loaders like that, they take up, I mean, you get a lot more usable space.
Yeah.
As well as being more energy efficient and things like that.
What did she mean by you want to make sure you get the clothes in the washer? That was a sort of a prerequisite for all washers, isn't it? You want to...
Yeah. Well, I think with this one being a front loader, there's kind of a little gap in between where the door shuts and like a lip, if you will.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you want to make sure you get the clothes all the way into the washing tub.
Yeah, because if you close the door with the clothes, sound like it may leak. And that would be the problem with a front-end loader. If that gasket's not sealed, it's going to leak.
That'd be scary, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And make sure you get the cap in there, you get the tail out of the way.
Yeah, no kidding.
I guess
there's no agitator in there, I understand.
No agitator.
So you can get more clothes in it, for sure.
That's right.
An interesting aspect of all this would be for somebody to sit down and calculate. So if it costs... It says over $1,000. I don't know if they mean $1,200, $1,300, but whatever. How much do you save by using 35 gallons less of water and 90% of electricity? It'd be interesting to see what payback would be, how long it would take you to pay.
I could see a big payback on the electricity side.
I could, too. Yeah.
The water side, I mean, water's not that expensive yet, but the other question I have is how expensive is the detergent?
Yeah, that's the...
Because if you have to use a special detergent, perhaps it... I mean, I don't know. Everybody makes it now for these, but are getting there.
Some people on this said you could use regular laundry detergent, but use just half of the amount that you would normally use regular detergent.
So that would save you a box every time you bought.
Yep.
Yeah.
You just use half.
It would be, and I wonder if they, if they do the same capacity. I wonder if they'll handle the same amount of clothes.
They say at least as much, probably more, not having an agitator.
They hold more.
And I wonder how long is, because, like, golly, the reason I hate my dishwasher, I can wash dishes by hand and be done with it in 20, 25 minutes. My dishwasher runs for an hour and a half, or 2 hours,
Well, this new one I got doesn't seem to, I don't like it, doesn't seem to get them as clean as the old one, and they don't come out as dry as the old dishwasher.
It runs forever.
Well, it really doesn't run for, it runs about the same length of time, maybe even a little less. It doesn't make near as much noise or seem to get the house near as hot as the old one did. Anyway, Tommy, Skype works until we need it, doesn't it, huh?
Yes. I'm sorry. If that's on my end, I apologize, guys.
I don't know what it is. We'll figure it out. There's no big deal. We these things happen. Even on the Blind Handyman show, huh? I tell you what, I'll make you show up Tuesday and we won't have to worry about it, will we?
That's a good deal.
That's a good deal. All right, tell everybody hello and thank you, sir.
See you later, guys.
We'll talk
with Thomas.
You. All right, let's hang up him. Let me hear it hang up, make sure it did.
Hilarious.
There it hung up. All right, all right.
Because he was missing the first of every word.
It worked till we needed it. Let's take a little break, and we're still on. We'll be back in just a minute with Dale Campbell and our guest, Jim Baugh from, I believe, Louisville, Kentucky. Hang on. Well, it's your friend here at the Blind Handyman Show, Phil Parr, Don Patterson, Don Shaw, and Dale Campbell is with us as a guest today from Houston. And let's say hi to Jim Ball. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. And you?
All right. You're in Louisville, Kentucky. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Louisville, Kentucky. I met Jim on the For the People.
For the People. All right.
For the People side. Don Shaw is here, and Don
Hello,
Patterson
Jim.
And Dale Campbell are all gathered around our little old microphones today. Let's see. You now, you told me the other day what age you were. You're about as old as we are, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm about 64.
64. Well, you got a couple of us beat. Don is about 60, and I'm a couple of years older than you. And let's start by your level of vision is what?
Oh, it used to be about 2200, but it's degenerated from then.
It's degenerated from 2200? What snack are you having? A snack? Sound like you're eating candy or potato chips or something.
No.
Oh, I thought
I'm
I heard paper
some
rattling.
Feedback on my speakers here.
Is that right? You don't have any headphones?
No.
We'll have to buy you a set.
Ship them.
Yeah, we'll have to ship you a set of headphones. Let me try to get. There's Frankie, my dog.
Yep.
Anyway, you were telling me that you and your wife, for a while, owned a KOA campground, I think you said in Arizona, didn't you?
Yes, sir. This was in a little town called Seligman, Arizona. It's about 700 people, about 40 miles south of the Grand Canyon as the crow flies on I-40.
About 40 miles south of the Grand Canyon. And it's hot up there in the summer and cold as can be in the wintertime, I guess.
No, it doesn't get too hot in the wintertime or in the summertime. No.
Is that right?
Rarely gets about above 90, occasionally, rarely.
Well, that wouldn't be bad at all.
Yeah, we could live with that.
Barely gets above 90.
It's dry 90, too. It's not the humid 90 we get.
How long did you have this campground?
We were there for about 12 years.
And I think you said it was... I said, well, I'd like to be there. And you said, well, the bad thing is when the guy backs over, the water supply in the middle of the night, and you're out there with a shovel at 6 o'clock in the morning digging up the water line.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the negatives.
That's one of the reasons you're not there anymore, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Would be a serious.
But it would be a moneymaker, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be a cash generator. Looks like.
Well, we made a living at it. We made the most money in the last 3 years because you have to dump a lot of money in it to repair things and so on. But one of the reasons we got out, and it's one of the reasons of several, is when fuel prices started hitting $3 and better a gallon, we were concerned about how long are these people in these great big rigs going to be able to afford to do this.
Yeah.
And to show you my perceptiveness, the business has done nothing but grow. When the business went up with the fuel prices, ask me why, I have no idea.
You say business got better as fuel prices.
Go until it can't find any more fuel, period.
He's chopping too.
Business got better as fuel prices went up.
Yeah, doesn't make much sense, does it?
Doesn't make any sense.
Jim, I wonder, when you were working like with KOA, obviously that's some sort of organization, did you have to pay them fees? Was this a franchise? You owned it outright, or did you have to pay them monthly? Or I wonder how that worked.
Well, KOA is Campgrounds of America, spelt with a K. They're the largest franchise campground in the country, and you buy the franchise. You own the property and everything on the property, and you do pay them royalties. You pay them 10% of what they call the registration fee. That's when people come in, they pay their nightly rental or whatever, and that's what you pay them. Now, anything you sell, like propane we did, snacks out of the store, anything else, they don't have anything to do with that.
But did they get the whole registration fee or just 10%, you said?
No, they only took 10%.
Okay.
Actually, they took 8% was for the KOA operation. 2% went into an advertising fund.
Uh-huh.
Now, how many spots did you have there to rent?
We had about 70 spots. About 20 to 70 RV sites, that's with water, electric, and sewer. We had about 25 tent sites, and we had two small cabins. Cabin is a little wood, looks like a little log house, about 12 by 15.
Man, that's pretty nice. So you had a you had a lot to take care of out there then. It was just you and your wife running it?
Well, we started out with just the two of us, but you can't really do that. You need time off and so on. So we had usually one couple around or one person most of the time to help. And then the last 5 years, we had two, three people with us all, not all the time, but allow us to take off and do our thing.
But a guy becomes very mechanically adept if he owns one of these things, right? You have to be.
You either have to be able to do it yourself or have big enough or a big enough income to just hire it out. We weren't that way. We were kind of hand-to-mouth there for the first 5 or 6 years. I did have some background. I had been involved in building a couple houses, so I knew the, you know, how to, I could use a pipe wrench and a screwdriver and so on. I could get along.
Yeah.
But I got a lot deeper into some, we had a sewage treatment plant there that would handle 400 people a day. Mm. And there was a couple of pumps and two or three air blowers and a bunch of equipment down there. I had to figure out how to, had to learn how to repair it.
Now, this wasn't just a septic system. This was actually a sewage treatment plant.
Yes, sir. It's called a packet plant. It was consisted of three tanks. The effluent would come into one tank and circulate into the other two and then eventually be pumped up to an evaporation.
Yeah. And, of course, it, having that worked on would... And didn't you say that you were 90 miles from the nearest store or the nearest town? Didn't you tell me that?
Yeah, we're about 80 miles from Prescott, Flagstaff, and Kingman. All three of them was about 80 miles, so... Whenever it was time to go get groceries, you definitely had a list.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you couldn't, if you got into some plumbing thing, you couldn't say, babe, would you run to the hardware store and get me a an elbow? You know, yeah. You couldn't do that, could you? No.
Well, for most things, no. But there was a little guy in town had a kind of a general store. He had
two
household pipe, your half inch and three quarter fittings. Anything bigger than that, you had to go to town. We had a half inch, three quarter inch, 2 inch, 2.5 inch, and 3 inch lines in there.
And you it'd be impossible to keep parts for all of them, but I bet you tried. I would imagine. But you
well, I don't know about you, but any time you get into plumbing, it's at least two trips to the plumbing store that are full. So
I would
make a list of what I thought I needed, and then what, by the time I got there, I said, well, maybe I'll get a couple extra elbows and a couple extra length of PVC because I'm going to make a boo-boo here somewhere.
Yeah.
So eventually, over the 12 years, I built up a supply of the most common things I needed. We also had, I don't know if you guys are familiar with phosphate hydrants, about a 5 foot piece of 1 inch pipe with a head on the top and a shutoff valve on the bottom. And they're buried 3 feet in the ground and the top sticks up and there's a handle that you open to get water to flow. And when you pull on this handle, it opens up a little valve about 3 feet underground. Well, and then when you close that, water drains from the head down underground. So when you put them in the ground, you put a bucket of gravel in the bottom to get a chance to drain. So at night, or when it's freezing, the pipe won't freeze and burst. We had probably 85 or 90 of those.
Oh, man.
And there were mechanics of them. There was always something to do on those.
Yeah, and so you finally became disillusioned with this and said, I'm tired of all this. I think I'll move.
Well, I didn't get disillusioned with the campground business. We got disillusioned with the town. Well, by that I don't mean the town itself. I mean it just got tiring to go, 80 miles anytime we wanted to go see a movie or go out to dinner or whatever. And we're getting older, and I was out there. It was snowing one day, and I have a golf cart, and my daughter got it stuck in the snow, and I was out trying to dig it out and put out and. noticing I was having was running out of gas physically, and cut story short, went in and had a three-way bypass and decided, well, maybe we need to get to an area where there's a little more medical.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm closer to the doctor.
The only thing there, and where we were at, you have a heart attack or something serious, a helicopter has to come and get you.
Yeah, oh yeah, being that far away from anything.
You know, as you get older, you're going to have problems. So we decided, well, before we get too deep in trouble, we probably ought to move. And that was one of the contributing factors. There were many, but, you know, it's one of the old deals where the straw breaks the camel's back. There were several.
Well, what was the connection or attachment to Louisville, going from Arizona to Louisville?
Well, you guys are probably familiar with that old song about the boll weevil looking for a home. We closed escrow on the campground on June 15th of last year, got in a truck and just decided we'd been all over the West and we'd never really seen much of the Midwest or the East. So we got in a truck and decided we're going to go find another campground or some other business. We really weren't sure what we wanted to do. We had a... We had a bucket load of money and didn't have any pressure to do anything in a big hurry.
Yeah.
We wound up drifting around. To cut the story short, we were on the internet with people, with brokers and campground brokers and so on, and we couldn't find a campground we were happy with. And we, to cut the story short, we looked at this place in Louisville, a laundromat, and numbers look good, and we figured, well, that's a decent-sized place, and it's kind of nice. We like it, and, you know. So, cut story short, we bought the place. We've been here ever since.
Yeah, but you went lots of places. I think you said you went down in South Texas, went down to Corpus, you went over in Louisiana. So you moved. You really did a lot of traveling before you decided on Louisville.
Oh yeah, we were in Corpus Christi. We looked at two or three businesses there, and as we'd go to the motel and hook up the laptop to the internet and communicate with business brokers in Alabama, Mississippi, and so on, all the way to Virginia Beach. We looked at a couple of businesses there and went up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's where we bumped into this guy that had something in Louisville, and we got on the phone and talked with him. And, you know, you always ask, finally you learn how to do a little more efficient. You just say, is this business making any money? And give me the skinny on it. And this one, the numbers looked reasonable, so we got in the truck and come over here.
So you got in the truck, came to Louisville, but now since you've been there, you've bought another laundromat. Isn't that right?
No. We haven't bought one yet. We're looking for one.
Okay, but maybe that's what you told me, that you were just...
like looking for the prettiest rock in the river. We've got criteria, and we're looking. We may or may not buy one. I don't know. We're also looking for a car wash.
So how much maintenance is there to do in the laundry?
Whether that comes to happen, I don't know. It just depends on the circumstances when we run into something.
Yeah.
He doesn't have headphones, so he's having a hard time hearing. How much maintenance is there at a laundromat to do?
Well, you've got 20 what they call top-load machines, similar to what you probably have at home. You got 20 of those about 11 years old.
Ah.
So cut story short, there's always something to do.
Man.
In the bigger machines, they're newer. I just bought four brand-new ones and 10 new dryers, so there's not much maintenance on that. But the home-style machines, there's basically it's not too bad. There's coin jams is usually the problem. Where you put quarters in the receptacle. Burning out belts, people overload the machine and put in twice as much laundry as they should, and it burns up the two belts. There's a one belt, one drives the agitator in this tub, and the other drives the water pump. You replace those. That's the majority of the problems. Anything serious, because I don't have a shop area there, that's the appointment. I usually just call the man in for anything other than if I can't do it in half an hour, 45 minutes, I call the man in. And I found somebody that's really good. He comes in. I tell him on the phone, I got this problem. 9 times out of 10, he's got the part on the truck when he shows up. He's in and out in a half an hour. So
yeah,
I don't do too much of it anymore, mainly because I don't have a place to work on it. The last time I worked on one, I had it up and my head lay on my back underneath the machine. And here come two little kids, and they got their head under there trying to help me, and I'm yelling at them. I can't work under those conditions.
Yeah.
I don't do a whole lot myself. I do anything I can do in an hour or half an hour, I'll do. But it's mainly because I don't have a shop for you.
Now, do you live on the same site as the laundromat or not?
No. Uh-uh. It's in a shopping center. We live about miles away.
Oh.
See, I always wanted, when I was in college going to laundromats, I always wanted a bar in there.
Yeah, a bar.
Laundromat with a bar.
Do your laundry, you know?
Yeah. Makes sense.
There's a guy in California that does that. He's got a pizza parlor, and back in New York, they've experimented with wine tasting or wine beer and wine bar in the laundromat.
Yeah.
But that can cause you a lot of hassle. I worked in a bar years ago, and I don't want to deal with that anymore.
Oh, my idea was single marked. It's a shopping place for single men, and you come in, and the lady will buy your groceries for you, and she'll also do your laundry for you, and you just sit at the bar. Of course, you have to pay her nicely. But single marked, I never could.
That's not a bad. I like that idea too.
Never could get that off the ground. As a lot of my ideas, I wanted. I'm the guy that wanted to lay the Statue of Liberty on its side. It's leaning already. So what the hell, you know? Just lay it over on its side.
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
Well, you brought up doing your laundry. That's in some modern laundromats, that's 50% of your income. It's drop-off laundry where people come in with a bag and you charge them by the pound to do it, and they pick it up the next day.
Yeah, that'd be a deal.
We started that, and it's starting to be a growing part of our business.
You know, maintenance-wise, and if it became like 80 or 90% of your business, although it's a little more labor, you might be better off maintenance-wise if you're doing it yourself, because you know your machines and you won't overload them.
Yeah, if you were doing laundry, and that could be, I could see how that could be a money making deal.
So you got somebody that's there that'll do people's laundry for them. You've hired somebody, or you do it yourself?
Well, my wife and I work basically 21 hours a week. We pick Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and we hire people to cover the place from then on. We're open from 7 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, and we've. I don't know about you guys, but if you ever had employees, that's always a problem. We've been fortunate. We've got a good crew, and they basically take care of it. If somebody comes in a hurry, I'll break down and do it. I'm not opposed to doing other people's laundry.
Yeah.
It's like any other business. It boils down to customer satisfaction.
Oh, sure. No question.
So you're there... those 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you're there all day those 3 days?
We're there for 8 hours those 3 days,
okay.
Yes.
All right. And the rest of the time, sometimes it's on its own? There's nobody there?
No. It's always attended.
Oh,
it's always attended. There's always someone there.
How many times do you get called from your evening person saying, I can't make it?
Yeah.
And then do you have to go cover?
Well, I was having that problem with this one individual, so I got rid of him, got somebody else, about once every 3 weeks. I'm telling you the scheduled time we're there. Like, I have to go down tonight, close up, and empty the meat and a few things.
Uh-huh.
I usually go down. In any laundromat, the majority of your business is done on the weekend. So Friday night, I usually go down there, take an hour to load up the snack machine and the soap machine that we sell. That's all, you know, make sure that everything, any of the coin jams that have happened, make sure that the change machines are full of quarters. That usually is an hour on Friday nights because you make all your money on the weekends.
Uh-huh. But the snack machines are yours also?
Well, we have one vending machine that's ours. I just bought that a while back. It's potato chips, candy bars, and so on. I do have a fellow that I split with him. He has, 6 or 7 game machines. A pinball machine, Pac-Man game, all that type of video games. And then he also has a couple little candy dispensers, put in a quarter and a handful of M&Ms fall out.
Yeah, we know about those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Income.
We know about those. Don's got a couple of those.
I just let him take care of it. I don't deal with steel, much steel candy. I don't want to get involved in trying to repair pinball machines. It's not in my area. So we sit there, and it generates enough income to pay the rent on its space, plus give me a little bit of.
Yeah.
Normally on that situation, it's split 50-50 for every dollar that goes into the pinball machine, I get 50 cents. And it's a good business, you know.
Well, at least you're not out there digging up lines in the middle of the night, digging up the line that somebody backed over. And if it's closed at 10 o'clock at night, then you can sleep, right?
Well, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Now, the campground business is a very good business in terms of people. It's really neat. The majority of the time, you know, you're never bored. There's always something to do. When you got 70 picnic tables to take care of, there's always something to do.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I guess at first you met a lot of interesting people from all over the nation. You probably got tired of that, though, listening to everybody's story about all their places they'd been. That'd get old, wouldn't it, I guess?
Well, we were close to the Grand Canyon, so about 20% of our business was Europeans. They would fly into Las Vegas or Phoenix and rent their RV, and we would quite often be their first spot. So I had a lot of fun with the Germans and the Swiss and so on.
Yeah. Well, good luck with your second laundromat. Hope it all works out. And I want to do you as one of these days on my Blind Like Me show, but I'll call you and we'll talk about that. Jim, we thank you, sir, and we're going to go.
Thank you very much.
This will be on this weekend on ACB Radio and on Reading Services. You're familiar with ACB Radio, right?
Yes, sir.
You know about that. All right, sir, we thank you, and we'll talk to you in a day or two, Jim.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
That old Skype.
Interesting.
Let's see. Now we got it. I'll tell you what I think. I think that may be my problem. Maybe I'm hitting it too hard, feeding them too hard, you suppose? Well, technologies. Thomas Edison didn't invent the light bulb overnight, did he, Dale? No.
It wasn't your fault, Thomas.
This new fast computer you've got running here in the studio.
I think it was. I think it's operator's error. Operator error. Why don't we take a break and we'll come back and talk about synthetic deck boards and how expensive they are How weak they are, and can you drive nails through them, and should you use wood screws? And back in just a minute, Dale Campbell and Don Patterson, Don Shaw, and Phil Parr. Hang on. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. It's beautiful afternoon is what it is. I guess it's about 72 up here.
Yeah,
right in the middle of May. Perfect weather. I'm going to be out playing golf, I guess, or something like
this
that.
This is a day to do it, let me tell you.
A day to do it. All right, Brother Campbell's building a big deck. Tell us about
it. Big deck, man. Well, we had Anthony and Aluminum, you know, the gentleman you had on did the silver screens for us. They do patio covers.
Sure.
Yeah, I know.
Put us up a 24 by 16 patio cover.
Man.
Whoa.
In the back of the house. It pretty much fills up the whole back little part of our yard here in this patio home.
Yes, sir.
I bet.
One of the things we were excited about, because we've got two big storm, you know, sliding glass doors back there.
Uh-huh.
And last year you could just feel the heat radiating in through them. So this year, hopefully in the shade, we'll do a little bit better. But the little deck that's there is kind of rotten, and I was wanting to replace it. So I started looking at all that composite decking.
Yes.
And my goodness, I mean, a 16-foot piece of, you know, 1x6 decking runs $30.
Man!
Whoa.
And it's made out of, since I've been researching it, there's probably about, there's a lot of different manufacturers of this material.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are made from plastic and wood flour. And there's a few brands. Choice is one of the ones that we've kind of been looking at. And they're actually made from plastic, wood sawdust, and then they add in rice flour. Now, why they do that, I don't know. I guess it's something in the makeup or the chemistry of it or whatnot.
Rice flour?
Yeah, rice flour.
Which Whoa. Was like what is that?
So like, wow, that's pretty weird.
If you run out of something to do, you could grind it up in your blender and eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or I wonder if the varmints have discovered rice flour.
Right?
You know.
Well, and they say that's one of the big draws to it is because, of course, it you know, termites aren't interested in it. It won't decay. It won't rot. It won't shrink and things like that. But when we started researching it, they make the plank boards in different lengths from 12 feet to 20 feet. Then that's about it. They make 42-inch long, like 4x4 posts and 2x4s that can be used for posts. And the inside of these are hollow, which is kind of cool. So if you want to, you know, need to run wiring or whatever through them, you can do so. But they only come in 42-inch lengths. Then they also make the spindles, you know, in case you want to put a railing around it. And they make banister tops and rail tops and things like that. They make a face board also that you can put around the edge of the deck that has a little lip to it that's made out of the same material. But when we were talking to the fella, what you have to build it on is regular lumber. You know, be it treated, you know, 2x6s or 2x8s or whatever. And I was like, well, that's kind of ridiculous. I mean,
so you build the frame out of regular lumber?
Regular lumber.
Wow.
And in my case, I mean, this is going to be built right on the ground. I was like, well, why am I spending, you know, $4,000 for this deck top.
Yeah.
When it's going to be on regular lumber. And the more I got to looking into it, I was like, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to just order some of the extra and make the frame out of the deck boards. But as it turns out, the reason they don't want you doing that is because it doesn't have the same tensile strength as lumber.
But if it's on the ground.
See, that's what I'm thinking. If it's on the ground, it should be the same. Of course, if it's supported up in the air, it's not going to have.
Well, yeah.
And that's one thing that I've seen mentioned a few times. It's not strong enough to support wall joists and walls and all this, that, and the other. So I'm thinking, well, you know, what if so-and-so's family comes over? Because they all run about 350 pounds on the hoof, you know.
Yeah, and what if you roll the piano out there, you know, for a little afternoon honky-tonk music?
Yeah, no square dancing on the deck, please.
Yeah.
But the only advantage I see about the deck board, I mean, it's a free color. It's already painted, right? There's no painting?
Yeah, it comes in some of them. Most of them will come in a sand color, a redwood color. There's like a weathered gray wood color.
Right, I've seen the gray.
Then gray is what is predominantly found everywhere.
Yeah.
Of course, Candace wants she's interested in like it's a wood brown color.
Right.
That has to be ordered in. But about the two advantages I see to it, one, of course, the decay and the rot and all that stuff, but with it not being really in contact with the ground, that's not that big a deal. But the other one is just the shrinkage.
It won't shrink?
Yeah, it will not shrink.
Okay, I was curious, though, how did you, I missed you right when you first came on, did you give a price, a board foot on this?
A 16-foot plank runs $30.
16 feet?
16 feet.
16 by 6.
5.5 inches coverage?
It's a 1x6x16.
Okay.
And they are real 1x6s, right?
Yeah, they are true 1x6s.
True 6 inches.
Yeah.
So 2 to a foot, and it costs how much per 16?
2 to a foot would be $60
so a
16 foot.
It's $30 a...
So it's $30 a board. So 8 foot is 30... Yeah, it's almost $4 a board foot.
My God. That is, you know, and you and if you use just, the, you know, the regular wooden deck boards, they're kind of expensive. But the way you put it now, you put them right up against each other. I don't see, you know, except for a little painting, Man, I'm not sure I could justify the difference
in
the
deck
cost.
I built out in Pearland, I used just regular all, you know, treated lumber.
Right.
And I used regular, you know, 1x6 deck boards that were already routed on the edges.
Right.
And nice and sanded and all that. And I want to say they were about half the price. I want to say they were about a little over two something a board foot.
Yeah, but that's gone up since you did that.
And that's because, I mean, they were all finished, and that's something I haven't looked into. I know that when I was initially looking at building the frame out of the 16th, you know, out of the regular, the composite decking, a 2x6x16 treated lumber is just a little over $10. So it's about a third of the cost.
Yeah.
Now, one thing the guy did tell us at Lowe's, he said, fill out a commercial account. You know, get set up with a commercial account, and I can give you a substantial discount. But I haven't called back to find out what that is. I'm still getting the bill of materials together, if you will.
Yeah, we have a building supply place up here. It's called the Big Ten Barn, but, I mean, it's not a franchise. They had a couple, but it's actually owned by it's a pretty large company now, but they gave me a builder's discount. Really, it came out to about, like, 10%. On certain things. Certain things you get no discount. You know, it depends on their cost. But like lumber and sheetrock and stuff, I got a good discount from them.
See, and that definitely helps.
It does. And I did the same thing. I said, you know, I'm building my own. I'm my own contractor. And the guy said, here, sign here. And so
contractor done.
That's basically what we did. We just filled out the application and set it up. And then, you know, because I'm going to need, you know, brackets and screws. Goodness gracious. I sent Mr. Shaw a list of that. And it was like, I figured up 1,530 screws just to lay the deck.
Yeah.
So that's what I was saying. When y'all coming down, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have to use a special screw?
Yes. The screw for this composite decking, it's a stainless steel screw. It's a square head, you know, an X-drive, which I like.
Right.
But it's a thinner head. So it's more like a kind of between a common nail and a finishing nail.
Okay.
So when the head goes down, it sets itself, and then you can just tap the top where you put it in at with a hammer, and the material covers it up, so you almost can't even see where the screws went in.
Right.
Okay. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
but what I want to do is eventually screen this in underneath the porch so we can enjoy it, you know, in the summertime without getting carried away by the mosquitoes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was kind of dismayed to find that, you know, at first when my brother and I went and we were looking at it, you know, oh, here are these 2x4s and 4x4s, and, you know, not having the vision, I couldn't see that, hey, these are only, you know, 3.5 foot long. They're not, you know, 8 footers.
Right.
That I could use for studs and all that stuff. So I'm kind of trying to play in my mind now, what can I do, you know, to build the walls? Because I'd rather have the upper structure built out of this stuff, mainly for the shrinkage factor. Because a lot of times if you trim stuff outside and it shrinks, then, you know, where your joints were nice and tight, all of a sudden you've got a quarter inch gap here and, you know, an eighth inch gap over here, and it's kind of bad.
On my screening, I'll tell you, I've priced it both ways, you know, lumber, and I'll tell you, you can get some pretty good deals like doing it out of aluminum. You know, getting somebody that actually just, I have a guy here, we have a guy here in Lufkin, that's what they build, these screened-in rooms.
Yes.
And actually, if you catch him in between jobs, he can come pretty close to competing with wood.
All right, now, are you going to do this with this newfangled, this plastic lumber?
Well, that's what I'm going to, the first thing, I can't do anything until this weekend, because Candace is having an after a school's out party for the teachers. Since we've been married, I've learned, man, the teachers celebrate more than the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once they get done, then I'm going to go back there and start ripping that deck up and see what's underneath it. Now, if I can get away with setting all this lumber, what I'm worried about is having to put concrete, you know, cement blocks or cement stepping stones underneath the frame to level it. If I can get away with putting it all on the ground and not having to raise one end of it to level it, then I'm probably going to use all the plastic.
Why?
For the case that I don't want in 20 years to have to come back and replace it.
Well, you won't have to do it for 60 years, but in 20 years you won't live in that house.
Yeah, that's the deal.
I hope we are.
In 20 years you won't live in that house.
Think you'll about find, if you're going to move. That's
you'll
a
find
good
some
point.
Bigger, better deal within 20 years. Well, you won't live in that house.
Remember this, if you just built a 16 by 16, just the planks would cost you, 16 times 60?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to have a lot of money invested in your deck, son.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that.
That deck, the covered part of my deck, which you've been on a couple times, that's undercover, has been there 16 years and shows no signs of wear whatsoever.
Fantastic.
It's just there, and it's made out of deck boards.
Right.
So, anyway, let us know.
That's what I want to do. Once I can get my bill of materials together, then I'm going to price it out both ways.
Both ways, yeah.
And yeah, kind of call us in a couple weeks and give us those totals, Dale.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll let you know which way we went.
Yeah, I would really be interested.
Well, hell, I hope y'all will be down here firsthand to help carry
the
lumber.
You're going to have to sell a lot of ID mates to pay for this plastic deck, big fella. Listen, appreciate you, and I'll talk to you in a day or two.
All righty. Y'all have a good one.
Later, Dale.
Brother Dale Campbell for you.
Yeah.
And other than our Skype problems, we've done 198, haven't we?
Yep.
We're going to do 199 at the one or 200 at the Pavilion over at Don Pat's house that we've talked about so much, and tell you all about it. And we'll do that in a couple of weeks. Thank you, boys.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Don Shaw, Don Pat. We'll see you next week. I'm Phil Parsi, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.